Our next case this morning will be State versus Navarro.
Good morning. May it please the court. Chris Gibson on behalf of Mr. Pedro Navarro. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Three.
Mr. Navarro is challenging his judgment and sentence for 8 counts of communicating with a minor and 2 counts of extortion. Several issues are raised, both in a statement of additional grounds for review and an opening brief by me. I'm planning to focus in first on the failed Faretta colloquy regarding his waiver of his right to proceed pro se, and then secondly discuss the sexual assault protection orders. Unless the court wants me to go a different direction. With regard to the improper Faretta colloquy, Judge Spector misstated the law, made an affirmative misrepresentation of the law to Mr. Navarro when she told him, look, if you go pro se, you're done. You can't go back. He asked, I can't recall my pro se status. She said, no.
So is the law that, done. Is it that Mr. Navarro had to be advised that the court would have discretion to appoint another lawyer if he requested it?
Should have been given the, yes, he should have been advised that there's no guarantee you can get an attorney back if you decide later that this was a bad idea.
Okay.
It's possible there's discretion to do that.
Well, let me ask you, under these circumstances, I believe there was 2 weeks to trial, right?
Right.
Is it realistic that under those circumstances that the court would have exercised its discretion to appoint another lawyer if Mr. Navarro changed his mind?
At the time when the decision was made, or the colloquy occurred with Judge Spector, trial was pending. It was coming up close. It ultimately got delayed. But
so under these circumstances, it would have been somewhat misleading to tell Mr. Navarro that he had an opportunity to change his mind and get another lawyer.
But he did. I mean, that discretion always existed for the trial court, whichever trial court was hearing the case.
In this circumstance, with trial 2 weeks away, don't you think it would have been a little misleading to tell Mr. Navarro that?
No, I don't think it would. What was misleading was telling him there's no way you can get it back. That was an affirmative misrepresentation of the law. And you can't have a knowing, voluntary.
So in your view, what exactly is the law as to what Judge Spector should have told him?
She should have said that you can ask, but there's no guarantee a trial judge is going to grant your request to reappoint counsel because you are exercising your right to proceed pro se, and depending on the circumstances, the judge may say it's too late. So you need to think long and hard about whether or not you really want to go pro se, because there's no guarantee you can get an attorney back if you want one. That's what Judge Spector should have said, but she didn't. She said you can't do it. She affirmatively misinformed him about what the law was, and that makes his waiver fatal. He waived his right because of what she said.
And what specific case are you relying on for your description of what should have been said?
Well, I'm talking about the facts of the case. Just experience, I guess, that reading through cases, I mean, people have gone pro se and they later get appointed counsel. I mean, mm-hmm. I've seen it happen in numerous cases.
Yes.
And there's discretion that exists there. I can't cite you a specific case at this point to tell you, but I believe it's in the briefing that talks about what you can do there. So we're asking, because his waiver was incorrect or was invalid because it was not knowing, voluntary, and intelligent, he improperly waived his right to proceed pro se, and therefore his conviction should be reversed and remanded for a new trial where he can properly exercise his right of whether he wants to proceed pro se or not. Moving on to the sexual assault protection orders, this really turns on how we want to interpret the word any in any sentence under the relevant statutory provisions. The state is saying, no, that only it refers to all the sentences imposed at the time of sentencing. And that's the latest, the longest sentence is what sets the expiration date for the sexual assault protection order. They get there by a very myopic view of what the statute says, and they focus in on any sentence to the exclusion of the rest of the statute. And you really have to interpret statutes by looking at the entire scheme. And if you look at the entire scheme of this statute, 790.150, it is all in reference to the predicate offense. It's a sentence, a victim, a sexual assault. It's all in the singular. And so
you think any only refers to a particular sentence?
It refers, well, I think it can be interpreted as broadly as the state has interpreted it, or as broadly as I have interpreted it, which is any type of sentence or any number of sentence. And if you just look at 6C, you don't get any guidance, because any sentence could mean either of those. But when you look at the broader text, it's referring to the predicate sentence, the predicate offense. Any sentence for the predicate offense.
And how do you define the predicate offense?
Well, the predicate offense is the sexual assault which gave rise to issuing a sexual assault protection.
So the 2 years would only be related to the sexual assault.
Right, so 2 years after the expiration of that entire sentence. And
for,
none of these...
For the sexual assault, nothing else.
For the sexual assault offense, which typically, in most cases, ends up being the longest sentence anyway. But in this case, you have a number of sexual assault protection orders being issued for a number of different crimes, and you need to link the expiration to each specific predicate offense. And here, the judge said 2025.
How does a judge know, this is a new world, but how does the judge know what end date to put in the judgment and sentence? Or does the judge just parrot what the statute says, which is 2 years after? I mean, because, you know, you've got good time, you've got other...
Right, and other those issues. All get converted to community custody and all of that factors into it. So I recognize, and I guess the same way that they we've phrased things like how long is your community custody going to be? It's not going to exceed a certain amount and can put it in there. But I think a judge can look at a particular sentence for a particular sex offense and say, okay, here's the incarceration time, and any good behavior is going to be converted to community custody, and figure out what the end date is.
Let's just look at this statute again. I mean, the thing is that it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that you would put in a protection order that's only going to remain in place while the person is in prison, and then it doesn't apply when they get out, which would be the time at which they would be in the greatest danger of trying to get in personal contact with the person who's protected. Now, the statutory language says a final sexual assault protection order entered in conjunction with a criminal prosecution. Now, we had one prosecution here, State versus Navarro, okay? Shall remain in effect for a period of 2 years following the expiration of any sentence of imprisonment. Why doesn't it make sense to interpret the statute as saying that a sentence, we're talking about the sentence that was entered in connection with the criminal prosecution?
Because if you read that in isolation, you can certainly come to that interpretation, and that's why I'm saying you need to look at the entire sentencing scheme.
For any reason other than that it would not benefit your client? I mean, the thing is, the plain language of the statute says that. So why would we go farther out and try to come up with some other meaning than what the plain language already says?
The plain reading, at any sentence as in that section can mean exactly, it's just as reasonable as any type of sentence, as any number of sentences.
Okay.
In fact, under the state's version, they have to add an S to a number of provisions to make it work. I'll preserve the rest of the book.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Jennifer Joseph, King County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, appearing for the state. We're asking the Court to affirm Mr. Navarro's convictions. I will begin with the SAPO issue. And I think it's important when you are going through the exercise of looking at the entire statute, as counsel has suggested, that you also look at the purpose and the obvious purpose of this statute as reflected in the statement of legislative purpose, is to provide protection for people from their offenders who are not otherwise restrained. That's why it provides this sexual assault protection order for people who never accuse their offender, where charges are never brought against the offender, and that's why it extends that protection for 2 years following their release from any sentence. I believe that there's nothing ambiguous about this language, and Washington courts have routinely interpreted the word any to be broad and inclusive, to mean every and all. And if you look at the statute with that understanding, you see that the SAPO should expire 2 years following the expiration of all of the sentences, every sentence.
And then how does the court know when that is? Or does the court in the judgment and sentence just say what the statute says? Which it seems to me is the more prudent approach.
I agree, and I believe I dropped a footnote to that effect in my brief, because I was also unsure about how you come up with this expiration date. I believe in this case they went with the...
Well, it would be a nightmare.
It would be a nightmare, because you don't know how to account for earned...
Any number of things, right. Yeah.
So I think that a notation that parrots the language of the statute is...
Should be added to the judgment and sentence.
Or to the sexual assault protection orders, actually,
well,
which are...
Probably both.
I think that... I think
with the no contact order, it's in both. So, which is why I'm suggesting that the better practice would be to have the judgment and sentence revised to include that language, the statutory language.
I agree. I think you don't need to look any further than this very case to see why Mr. Navarro's interpretation of this statute doesn't make any sense. In this case, he committed the communication crime against 8 of his victims, and the extortion crime against 2. Now, he got the maximum sentence for the communication, which is 60 months. He got 84 months, I believe. I can't recall exactly. On the extortion crime, plus 2 18-month enhancements. So by the time, under Mr. Navarro's interpretation of the statute, by the time he has served his sentence for the communication offenses, he's still going to be in prison for a number of years, and then supervision. So that leaves the victims, the majority of his victims, 8 children, with no protection after he is released. And that's clearly not what the legislature intended when it enacted this, provided this civil remedy.
There's some little problems with the sentence that I would like to go over with you. It
yes.
has to go back because of what you agree is a mathematical error.
Correct.
That's one thing.
Yes.
Okay, but I don't think your brief addresses another problem, which is that the court apparently felt it was okay to go up to the maximum sentence, which is 5 years, if I understand it, and then add on some more for the enhancements, which you can't. Do you agree that that's something you can't do? And in other words, if you reach 5 years before the enhancements get added on, you can't. It can't be more than 5 years.
Well, the enhancements go to the extortion.
Yes.
Same problem, though.
He didn't get sentenced to the statutory maximum for the
extortion. He did not get 96 months on the – I thought he got 96 months, plus he got 2 enhancements running consecutive 18 months each,
yeah.
Which gets it to 132 months instead of a maximum of 120.
That's correct.
96 months plus 36 months
right.
equals 132 months.
Okay. Right.
So
So you are correct that I did not identify that issue in my brief, and I would need a little bit of time to think about that, but I'm very happy to provide some supplemental briefing if you would like.
Well,
some guidance
maybe
on that.
If it's like about one page to just say what you think the proper calculation would be. Sure. I gather that you – I'm not sure if you're ready to agree with what I just put out here, which is that you can't – the firearm enhancements can't be on top of the maximum –
sexual motivation enhancements.
Whatever they are. They can't be on top of the maximum for the crime.
I'm reluctant to agree only because I would feel more comfortable if I had some materials in front of me to refer to.
I believe there's a statute that says that.
I believe.
And then one very minor detail I would like to... Oh, there's another thing, too, and that is that in the judgment and sentence, it says the community custody was imposed for failure to register as a sex offender. Which I do not think there's anything about sex offender failure to register in this case, so I guess it's a typo.
That would be my guess as well.
All right. Okay, and then finally, since you're here and since we see, the King County prosecutor all the time, I would just like to say that I wish that prosecutors would not charge using Roman numerals and then repeat the Roman numerals in their briefs. We'd like to get rid of Roman numerals. It makes it hard to read, especially when you've got count VIII, count VIX, count VX, whatever. You know, it just numbers are better. If you could take that message back,
absolutely,
it'd be great.
Yes, I believe that would make my job easier as well. I will address briefly the Feretta colloquy. I think the court is right to note the posture when he came and asked for the opportunity to represent himself. The trial was only 2 weeks away. The colloquy set out all of the information, gave him all of the information that it was required to give under Silva, and which is what one of the cases that Mr. Navarro is relying on. And Silva doesn't say anything about the possibility of reappointment of counsel as being one of the things that you have to be informed of when you are deciding whether to waive your right to counsel or your right to self-representation. And in fact, I'd also like to call the court's attention to the case of State versus Hahn, which is 106 Washington 2nd, 885. In their footnote 9, the court kindly sets out a model for at a colloquy as guidance for trial courts. And if you read through that colloquy, you'll see that in two separate places, the colloquy warns the defendant that he can't change his mind about this. So that is that in the context of this case, where trial was 2 weeks away, that was to decide that he was not going to be reappointed counsel was completely within the trial court's discretion.
So what if it hadn't been 2 weeks away? Should the court have exercised its discretion to talk to him about the possibility of obtaining counsel if he decided to go pro se?
I don't believe that that is a required element of the colloquy. It is.
So then whether it's 2 weeks away or not, your position is this colloquy was not in violation of Feretta?
I believe the colloquy was not in violation of Feretta, and even if you should inform a defendant of the possibility of reappointment of counsel, where that is not a possibility, because the trial court has decided there will be no more continuances, as she indicated in this case, then that was a proper exercise of the discretion, and it's proper to inform the defendant that that's not going to be one of his options.
But if you have a case where, again, you're not 2 weeks away, and the court hasn't said there'll be no further continuances, should the judge be advising the defendant of the whether he would get an attorney appointed if he decided to go pro se?
My feeling is that that sort of undermines the point of the whole process, because he's considering whether or not to waive his right to counsel. There's a presumption against a waiver of the right to counsel, so the court is always going to be looking to avoid a waiver of counsel. And, you know, it's just sort of an interesting proposition to say, I can't exercise my right to waive counsel unless I know that I can recall that decision. And it's not a very compelling argument.
Well, I don't know if it's recall, but I can get help. I guess that's what it is.
Right. Well, the law is what it is. The defendant does not have a right to stand by counsel. He does not have a right to reappointment of counsel. And I think that, as Judge Spearman pointed out, it would be rather misleading to inform him that that was a possibility. I can briefly address the other, the no contact orders, if the court is interested, but I see that I only have 35 seconds left, so I guess I will say we ask the court to affirm Mr. Navarro's convictions and to remand for correction of the judgment and sentence, and the SAPOs as outlined in my brief and in the one-page brief yet to come. Thank you.